Yeah, so when it's on YouTube, it's better because you get to see, like, the video as well.
Oh, okay.
With the recordings that the Kadampa Center used to do, it was just audio. So it's actually better now, I think.
Okay, now I understand. So in YouTube you have the video and so, and because normally if I see the Lamrim, Hamilton, the Lamrim, I hear on the home page, and there was only a record, not the video. Okay, perfect. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much.
Yeah, and it's, during the class tonight at some point.
Oh, hey, what's up?
I will put the link to the Kadampa Center's YouTube page so that you can maybe save that somewhere and be able to reference it more easily.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Okay, when we are streaming live, I do have payment spotlighted though. And let's see, I've got 7 o'clock right now. Hi, Sue. So let's give it another minute because we usually have more folks than this, and then we'll get started. But I do have a few announcements, if that's okay, Hemant.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right. So spotlight myself for this. Okay, so basically the announcement that I have is that, yes, this is class 7 of 7 for the past, presenting the past, sorry. And our next module is module 4, and that one is called the Spiritual Teacher. And so we're going to have 2 weeks on break. So our break will actually run next Monday, which is Memorial Day Monday, and also the following, which is June 7th. So our next module actually begins on June 14th. And again, that's the Spiritual Teacher with Robbie Watkins. And Robbie is the Kadampa Center's director, and he has been for a very long time, since 1998. So please join us for that. Again, we are, after this class tonight, we're on a 2-week break, so. But no fear, there's so much going on. And my favorite place that I was just telling Gary on the Kadampa Center website is the calendar. So if you just go to kadampa-center.org, up in that right-hand corner is the calendar button, and you can see all the amazing things that are happening at Kadampa Center. So there are weekday morning meditations. There are pujas that you can attend. There are Tara practices, teachings with Geshe-la on Sundays and Wednesdays. And then there's also a really neat thing. I have not attended this yet, but there's a group discussion on Thursdays in which students will watch a video of a teaching and then have a discussion about it. And in June and July, and it's still happening now, but then later on next month, there will be 5 of those videos and discussion groups that are specifically on teachings by His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and it's about Shantideva's Guide to the Bodhisattva Way, which is a teaching that Geshe-la often mentions, and you'll hear many of the Discovering Buddhism teachers mention it as well. Registration is required for that, though, because that one, I think, is held on site. I'm not sure if it's offered virtually or not. So again, check the website and just go to that that calendar button where there's so much going on. And there's even an animal blessing coming up in June as well, for those of you that have pets. But even if you don't, there's still, we usually will let worms and crickets go as well. So it's one of my favorite things to attend. If you've never attended it, I highly recommend it. Okay, so now I am going to go ahead and turn it back over to Hemant, and we can get started.
Sure. Well, thank you, Linda, so much. Also, we have Keshi Sangpo leading the circumambulations around the stupa, and that has been a wonderful experience also. That's one of the other new activities we've started every now and then. They announce that he goes around the stupa and everybody goes chanting with him and the benefits of circumambulation. So that was just amazing. But anyway, thank you so much. And I want to first of all say I don't know where everybody is from, but good afternoon, good evening to everyone. This is class number 7, and which is the last class of this module 3, presenting the path, as Linda said. And so today, I'm going to do something a little different. We're going to finish the greater scope. We started last time with bodhicitta. I want to finish that off with the 6 perfections. And then I will go through a summary like we typically do, but a little, like a little concise summary, because I think we've done enough of the repeating of the previous class. So you get a picture of the whole path that way. And then I'm time permitting, I have some questions just for discussion purposes. And then we have a great meditation today on bodhicitta. So that would entail that we've done emptiness, we've done renunciation, and then we'll do bodhicitta, the 3 aspects of the path. And so that would finish that. And then I have something a little different. I'm going to actually read as part of your meditation. So we'll start with this and end up in bodhicitta meditation, would be the foundations of all good qualities. And you'll see why I chose that particular prayer. It's a concise prayer from our prayer book. And so we'll do that. Before we get going, again, I think we should do the 3 prostrations. Okay? All right. Again, just our 7-point little calm abiding meditation for 2 or 3 minutes. We already know the routine about keeping your back straight. Depending on how you're sitting, legs are either crossed in a lotus position. If you're seated in a chair, their feet are flat on the floor. You want to keep your arms relaxed. Your right hand is over your left hand, thumbs touching each other. Your head is tilted slightly forward. And your jaw and mouth are also relaxed. And your tongue is on the top palate of your mouth, behind the teeth, touching the teeth. Eyes are slightly closed or slightly open. And we'll set our intention after we finish this little breathing exercise. Okay? So now just concentrate on your breath. Breath coming in, breath coming out. And that's where your mind should be. And so we are jumping right into it. Your mind may be busy or may have different thoughts. This is the time to just observe those thoughts, but tell yourself that those are just like clouds in a beautiful blue sky, and they go away. Don't latch onto them. And want to bring your mind back to your breath. And let's keep it there for a while. So setting our motivation now. So why are we doing this? What do we want out of this motivation? And what should it be? So we know that we want to develop our qualities. We know we want to be happier, less miserable. And we know that, and we are beginning to get some confidence, and that it's possible. And that's wonderful, isn't it? And then we look at others and we see they're in the same boat. We know they want the same, and so we want the same for them. That's compassion. So on the basis of developing our own qualities all the way to Buddhahood, may we be able to benefit every single sentient being. For this reason, and may this action of being here today, listening to these teachings, processing them, thinking about them, and apply them in our lives, be the cause for exactly that. Thank you, and bring your attention to the class. Okay, so this is the last class of this module. This is what we will cover today. I want to just give you, we started talking about bodhicitta last time, so just want to cover a little bit of it, so it's a segue into the next piece of the greater scope, the six perfections. A little bit on the nine stages of calm abiding. Maybe a sentence or two on Tantra Vajrayana, which is the module in itself that Don Brown teaches. And then we'll go through the foundation of all good qualities. I'll actually go through the prayers, and you will just listen in just like in a meditation, and hear the words, and see if you can focus on what those prayers actually mean. We go through a lot of prayers in Kadampa Center, and often when I was new, I was wondering what they meant, or what do they relate to, and today you will see how foundation of all good qualities relate to what you've been going through in this module. And then we'll do a meditation on general bodhicitta. We'll go through a brief overview of the module, so then we connect all the dots where we started. If you remember, we started an analogy taking a trip to New York, right? Same way, we are on a path. We'll take going step by step, you know, on a graduated path of Lam Rim. So we want to make sure we connect all the dots to finish, okay? Couple of questions, time permitting, just to have a conversation and to make sure that you at least remember some key points of this entire module, and then we'll do our dedication, okay? So let's talk about a little bit of bodhicitta. So we start with a quick definition again. What is bodhicitta? Okay. So you can see on the slide, and I'm going to read it, a principal consciousness that combines the two factors of wishing to be free, wishing to free all beings from suffering, and of wishing to attain enlightenment in order to achieve that. The spontaneous altruistic mind of enlightenment can either be aspirational or engaging. So if you go back to the first class when we do an introductory video, I believe it was Venerable Karen Wellham who said that there are two attitudes. We talked about it in the first class, a Hinayana and a Mahayana. Okay? The Hinayana attitude is for self-liberation. Okay, individual liberation. So they achieve the first scope of Lam Rim and the second scope fully. They take away all their obscuration. They have a great understanding of emptiness, but they are interested in their own liberation. There are still subtleties and tendencies left. And then Mahayana goes in and adds, in order to actually get enlightened, to become Buddha, you need to have universal attitude, okay? And so we bring in the compassion, the bodhicitta into it. And not only bodhicitta into it, but how do you use it like tools? And we'll go to that in the six perfections. And then the question comes up, why? Right? In your mind, what's the point or why? It's difficult for me as it is to even have compassion for little things, let alone the universal compassion, right? It seems a little way out there. So you start small. This is not that something happens spontaneously. For some, it may be easy. For others, it is not. However, if you put some logic into it, if you think about why, you know, and so the very first thing is if you think about a field of a phenomena, okay, and we don't even know if it's a field or how big it is or if there's a size to it, but for purposes of visualizing, if it was a huge field of this entire phenomena that we've been discussing, and we have continuity of our mind, so think about how many births, eons of births we've taken, all of us, and will continue to take. It's countless. You do the numbers. There's no way to actually figure that out, right? So now think about it. If you've taken that many births in different various forms, I'm pretty sure we bumped into each other at some point. It's like if you put a bunch of sand in a bottle and shake it, at some point those pebbles are going to touch each other. They're going to support each other, or they're going to at least bump into each other. So now the analogy has been taken of a mother. Why is mother important? Because if you just, from our today's conventional world, if you think about a mother, we talk about mother that loves you unconditionally, correct? Even if you think mother was not so loving, for example, aren't you glad you have life? You were born, she gave you birth, you have eyes and ears and nose and mouth and a mind that can practice. So a lot of gratitude goes towards mother. So think about all the sentient beings, including yourself, have been mothers of each other at some point. That's the point. That's the thought behind it. And right? And if we are all interdependent, and all these sentient beings, sentient mind possessors, have been your mothers, then it is we need to repay their kindness. If you are a Buddha who is omniscient and omnipotent, willing to help everybody, every living being, and if your goal is to become Buddha, then this is the universal goal you must incorporate in your mind. And you start small. You start small, and the meditation will walk you through it a little bit today. Okay? But we need to just understand the scope of this. So according to Master Santideva, as Linda has said, we all talk about Santideva here and there. So here's a statement from Master Santideva. Whatever joy there is in the world all comes from desiring others to be happy. And whatever suffering there is in the world all comes from desiring myself to be happy. So think about that last sentence. Okay? We've talked about it throughout the course about the ignorance. And ignorance is the root illusion, and then everything springs from them. The attachment, the anger, the jealousy, the pride, the envy, whatever you want to call it. So the root is not knowing how things are. So attachment, if you are self-cherishing, I don't want to have compassion, I'm happy with just who I am and it's all about me, then that's a delusional mind. Yeah, it itself has a little issue with it, right? Just that thought. So you always want the desire others to be happy. That's the desire you should have. And think about the phenomena, how minds are. We think concretely, as we talked about in emptiness, but it is not that way. We don't have inherent existence, and it's dependent arising. It's always dependent arising, cause and effect. And we come in touch with so many things, while we label it as so many things going on. So think about in this phenomena, if you have universal value and want to become a Buddha, then you want to develop bodhicitta. So they have been your mothers in the past. And that's the key point. Okay, so now, this is we're going to talk about six perfections. So we started last class with equanimity first. That was an equanimity of showing us, ourselves, that the enemy, the stranger, the friends, all this is inside us. There is no inherent enemy. There is no inherent friends. And we spoke a little bit about a few examples of the friends in the past have become your enemies. The enemies in the past, now you love them, you know, but it's all self-cherishing in a way, because they please you or they hurt you in some way in your mind stream, right? And the 98% we don't even think about. Those are neutral, we don't even care about. So think about that, that when you talk about universal love, you talk about, again, the entire phenomena. That's the nature you want to develop. When we do, even in the beginning, when we do the taking the refuge, right, when Geshe-la teaches it as, you know, we want to become enlightened. Okay, I want to take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By virtue of my practice in learning Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. That's the refuge we take in, right? So that covers Buddha. That covers Bodhicitta. Now, we've covered wisdom part of the path. We've covered the first and the second scope. In the third scope, part of Bodhicitta is now giving you tools, the method. You are here. You have this precious human rebirth, right? So what do we do? How do I practice this? So if you want to become Buddha, they are saying you need to practice this perfection. You need to perfect your practice. And that's why they're called six perfections. So when we start to practice, how do we start to practice? So let's talk about that. Okay. So I'll start from the bottom of a little statement from Lama Tsongkhapa. Generosity is a wish-fulfilling jewel with which you can fulfill the hopes of sentient beings. It is the basis of activity of bodhisattvas. In that it develops the selfless and undaunted courage to lead all sentient beings to enlightenment. Okay. So now think about generosity. Typically, when generosity comes to our mind, maybe we use a Kadampa-centered generosity, and maybe in your mind it's always money. But that's one aspect of it. Generosity of your time, you know, generosity of so many things, you helping somebody, you know, and this can be generosity anywhere. It doesn't have to be in one location. Helping somebody, taking care of somebody, giving your time, even helping out in the center to put the bowls together, or somebody picks up a broom and says, I'll sweep it, or somebody does gardening, all this is generosity of your time. You sitting here in the class is generosity, right? And obviously, of course, money is important. We say that with generosity, you look at a lot of other faiths, they have tithing and all kinds of stuff. It is always good to budget, go out there and see. And the generosity of giving is getting. If you put the seeds of giving, you think about what kind of seeds you're putting in, you will always receive. That's the opposite. That's what happens. Right? So you need to develop generosity, a generous mindset even. Okay? So it's not always giving things, but you can give time. But if you are able to give money, and it's very interesting for generosity, easy to give $5 to a friend, but to a stranger? And generosity is opposite of stinginess, miserliness, right? Well, the number shows thinking. So you want to develop this mindset. Okay. Let's see. You know, they say that in bodhisattvas, people, you know, bodhisattvas, they have a really amazing feeling. When they give, they are as happy as receiving. They love to give. And they take it to the point where they are so at such a high level that they don't even care about this life. They're altruistic. They'll even give their life to help others. That's how the level of altruism in generosity they can take. So at least what we can do is do small. You can budget time or something little that you can give to do something positive. And that's a great way to practice generosity. Okay? So the next thing, let's talk about the second parameter. So the six are generosity, morality, developing patience, enthusiastic perseverance, and then we develop concentration, and the last one is directly perceiving the wisdom of emptiness. Okay, these are the six perfections. And so now we are on to the second perfection, okay, morality. It's always also called as ethical self-discipline. So ethical self-discipline is where we refrain from destructive behavior by realizing its disadvantages. Okay? So think about the destructive behaviors we have right now. While we feed our ego, what happens? We get angry. We say those words. We sometimes scream at people. We have wrong thoughts. All these non-virtuous thoughts of body, speech, and mind sometimes, right? So morality talks about it enables us to avoid problems that arise from acting, speaking, and thinking harmfully. It develops trust in others, right? Overcomes compulsive negative behavior, the tendencies to be negative. You're being watchful. And then develops self-control, okay? And in the end, you're a much calmer person. Now, certain tendencies will be there. It's not easy to just switch off and be nice, but having a tool and realizing the path of Lamrim, you should at least be aware that when that arises, that you say, hey, calm down, slow down, do an antidote, do something, and try to practice it. Okay, for knowledge sake, there are three types of morality. Okay, the first one is restrain from doing non-virtuous actions. We already know non-virtuous actions are body, speech, and mind, and karma, right? So you refrain from doing those. The second morality is creating merits. The antidote to keep, do good things, help others, be generous, right? Support one another. You know, that could be a good one. And the third piece, of course, is benefiting sentient beings. Those are the three moralities. Okay. Just thinking about just refraining from harming others is a huge feat in itself. Think about sentient beings as not only humans. Think of all sentient beings, mind possessors, sentient in Tibetan. So think about it for a second. And we don't want you to panic and think, in generosity, I gotta give everything away. In morality, it's not talking about that. You know, it's just to start to think differently. It's a tool that gives you a pause and says, gosh, my mind, my seeds, we learned about karma, we learned about beginningless mind that continues the next life I will take. Do I want to go into the mental states of lower realms, or do I want to come back? Or do I want to liberate myself? And all of these things that I say and I do with my body, speech, and mind will have an impact, right? We already went through the death process. We'll cover that a little bit later. But this is the time you are in the high scope now. You're developing tools that while you go to work, while you do home chores, when you're doing gardening, whatever you're doing, think about using these perfections to improve or perfect your practice. Okay? So again, just like generosity, you should then budget some time for morality time. Time to help others. So not too complex, hopefully. These are short little pieces. Here's the big one. Patience. Okay? So what is patience, first of all, before we say what is being patience? Patience is the ability to endure difficulties without disturbing thoughts. Think about that for a second. It's an ability to endure difficulties without disturbing thoughts. Now you can think about your thinking, normal thinking, you have to wait in a doctor's office, oh gosh. You know, he told me to come at 2:15 and I'm here at 2:15 and now it's 2:45 and the darn guy is not here, you know. You go through this impatience or thoughts and negative thoughts. It's an antidote to anger, impatience, intolerance, disturbing states of mind. And again, when you really practice patience, it keeps you calmer. It brings you calmer state of mind. You know, and if you really look at what is an impatience, it is anger. It is aversion. It is irritation or annoyance. It's a response to I not getting what I want and when I want it. That's impatience, right? So sometimes you even get into a panic mode. Now think about when you're driving and maybe you think you might be late to work and a red light comes. Oh, it's the red light's fault. Oh, this stupid light now, right? It had to be red light when I'm in a hurry. Or when you just come out and you want to get to work and a school bus comes in front of you. Oh my gosh. Start losing our temper, our mind. So that's your trigger. That's when you're losing your patience. Is the bus standing there or red light changing anything that's going to happen? Will the results change? No. If you're late, you will be late. And you may not be late. But it's all self-induced mental state of mind, isn't it? So think about patience. Okay? Think about that red light. I love that. Actually, Venerable Rabina is the one who mentions this red light. Okay? And he says, just notice your response. You know, how irritated we get, how angry we get. It is the opposite of patience. And so practice, again, put in some practice time. And what is patience? She's, according to Venerable Rabina, she says, it requires courage. It requires to say, come on down and I will practice. So the minute it arises, that's the time to practice. So you welcome it. Whenever situations such as this come up, when there's a red light and there's school bus and you are irritated and you want to go to this meeting and you may be late, nothing is changing. At that point, just put in the mind to calm down and think about the six perfections. Think about the patience. It's a good thing, good practice. Okay. I mentioned last time about my example of how I used to get very impatient on the highway when somebody cut me off, you know, and I started reading this and practicing this. And then after a while, I started to make up stories. This person may be in a rush because they have an interview. Maybe this person is rushing because they're late to work or somebody's in a hospital. And then I would say every time I allow somebody to do it and I don't get angry, I will give myself a merit. And so I used to always tell myself, I got some certificate. I did 5 good things today and I did not lose my mind. So I started to practice like that. And after a while, I was like, go ahead. I need to catch up or do more, you know, so you can practice that way. So patience is very important. And especially think about it. All this sounds good right now because maybe we are in halfway reasonable state of mind. But when you are sick, when you have a flu, when you have a headache, what happens? Think about it. Where is spirituality then? That's the time to practice patience. Okay? When you have a headache, what do? We procrastinate. I'll do it later. Oh, I'm just laying down. Oh, I don't feel good. Right? So think about those things. Okay? So you welcome the problems. There's a very good prayer in our prayer book, the 8 transformational thought that Keshava always talks about, reading it once in a while. Just take a look at them if you get a chance. It's called the 8 thought transformations or thought transformational thoughts. It's one or the other. Okay? So think about that. The next one we're going to talk about. Enthusiasm or joyful effort. We can say that means not giving up when going gets rough. Instead, to continue putting forth the effort consistently and doing it joyfully. A little more eagerness. Okay? Remember what the ultimate goal is. The ultimate goal, the potential of your mind is to become Buddha. And to reach that, these are some tools. So yes, there are days we feel a certain way. And we'll talk about the laziness piece of it. There are 3 types of laziness, basically. And so it helps you when you do with this any kind of practice with enthusiasm, it overcomes this laziness, okay? Procrastinations, where we distract ourselves. Matter of fact, have you seen sometimes if you have to do something and you're not really enthused about it, you'll do 10 other things that you like to do. You'll clean this, you'll put that, you'll turn the TV on, you'll do everything but what you're supposed to do. We all do that. So this reminds us not to give up. That will happen. Not every single day or a moment will be same. We all know that there is samsara. You're going to face issues. You may get sick sometimes. But this is the point here, is not to lose. And, you know, I've had several Rinpoches even tell me, they'll sign a little card, I'll go and get their signatures or something, and they'll put down in the back, Hemant, never give up. And you will see how it has played again and again. There are days when you go a little down and you're not feeling good and all that, but you catch up right up again and back you are onto the train again. Right? So think about those. There's a gross laziness. I just can't be bothered. Right? That's the gross laziness. The second one is too busy to do anything. Procrastination, which we talked about. And then there is I'm not capable of doing it. It's a very pervasive laziness. They're in there, subtle. Everything we do is like, right? So you got to work with that a little bit in your mind. So it goes against tiredness. If your mind is strong, your body will do anything. This is the attitude to develop. And there are some examples of people who are major basketball players, or Armstrong, Lance Armstrong, who goes and even has pain in his body and problems in his legs, but he'll do bicycling and go up the mountain. And these people who achieve these big feats have always worked against whatever that laziness was, and they make it a very big effort. And so what we are trying to say here is, whenever you do your practice, develop a mind, that kind of a mind. And remember your goal and why are you doing it. And even though there are days when it's a little lull or you don't feel as excited, just carry on. Keep pressing at it. Okay, be consistent with it. So that's the point in this. Oops. Now, let's talk about concentration. Okay, so the first four are actual activities, right? And so now we're going to talk about our mind here for a while. So the fifth perfection, you want to develop this also, right? So you've taken the DB, most of you might have taken the DB about on meditation. So the Tibetan word for meditation is what? Gom. And what does it mean? To become familiar with, right? To familiarize. So of course, you've heard about place, calm abiding meditation, analytical meditation, right? This is the time to really, all the tools that you have learned, all the meditations that you've learned, you can actually take time to go through them. Think about them. This is your time to think and analyze all of those things about karma, about precious human rebirth, death and impermanence, about your mind, emptiness, bodhicitta. I mean, there are just plenty of this available, right? If you even look at some of the Lama Zopa Rinpoche's books, and he has some fantastic books on meditation, you can, and if nothing else, you can sit and think about these things that you've gone through and learned. So what are you doing? You're familiarizing your mind. And eventually, you are realizing why your tendencies are so tough to get out, and you want to turn them into positive, right? So you have to analyze it, and you have to integrate some of these things in your mind. So it's very important to learn to concentrate, right? It is a cognitive therapy. And remember, you are the boss. The workshop is in your mind. You know, you can realize why I feel this way, why I feel so attached to this. Then think about Buddha's teachings. Think about how you can relate to that and how you can turn that into a positive. Right? So once you have that, you then also need, so of course that's the concentration is the first mode. Second mode of concentration is to have an insight meditation. Okay? So we analyze everything, actual work begins there. So once you do this meditation and you have place your mind in a calm situation, now you can analyze everything and become familiar with it. And it's almost like when you take a math class, you know, first time you listen to some algebraic formula or equation, it's like, what? What is this? So then you listen to the teacher. You try to make sense of it. Then the teacher explains you. Then you listen. Then you go home and you may have to do a couple of things and read again. You contemplate on it. And then one day it happens. What happens? Aha, I got it. Those ahas are very important when you're turning your mind from a negative state of mind or non-virtuous actions. Even recognizing those things first is the aha moment. And then turning that into a practice is another aha moment. Right? And that's how you start to integrate some of these things that you've been talking about. One thing to read through this and get a lot of knowledge. But if you can take two or three things out of this and just integrate that into your life, just take the positive results you will get out of this. Not only in this life, but if you believe there is a next life and a continuity of mind, then think of all the benefits you get out of this. So that's the point of concentration. And so what I wanted to do is, you know, we do meditation. I want to see if I can. Okay, this is it exactly. When you do meditation, there are 9 stages of meditation. Okay? It's good to know this for knowledge sake. So you know that in your practice where you are. When you're first starting to meditate, the first stage is called the inner placement. Okay? You barely are able to hold on to a meditational object or image before losing it. So it comes in and out. Keshala says it's like popcorn. Comes in, comes out, pops. It pops in and pops out. That's your first level of meditation. The second level is called continual placement. So when you're concentrating on an object, the popcorns are still there, but the gap is a little bigger. There's still popcorns, but it takes a little while. It's not pop, 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 pop. Now it's a little calmer. That's the second. Okay, slightly better than the first one. The third one is called patched placement. So you become familiar with the object of concentration to the point where you can reestablish your hold onto the object immediately. So you go away, but you're able to bring it back. It stays there a little longer. You know, you lose it, but you're able to bring it back. You're still bothered by distractions, and that's why it goes away, but it doesn't stay with it, right? The fourth one is the close placement. So these are, remember, this is just when you start to meditate, when you're visualizing and placing mind, what happens? It comes and something else comes in, then goes away. Something else comes in, then a little later on, you start to concentrate and it stays there for a while. So you went from inner placement to continual placement. Now, patchy placement, you're able to stay there for a while. Right? It slowly starts to fade away, then comes back again. You're able to bring it back. Okay? And then the next one is the close placement. You can hold on to meditation object and image to the end of the session, longer time, without ever breaking the continuity of your concentration. The image will not be lost at this level, but you have to be careful in this level of what they call gross thinking mind or inattentiveness, okay, or excitement. You get dull-minded. You kind of lose the neutral feeling. You either get excited or very dull-minded. This is the step. After that, we go to subdued placement, okay? At this point, you have some level of dullness, subtle thinking mind. You're still able to concentrate. You're there, but a little dull. And Geshe-la says at this point, if you start to feel this way, open your eyes. Even get a fresh air. Take a deep breath. And then go back to it again. Because you refresh yourself like a little break there. Okay? And then you have a pacifying or pacification mind. Okay? The gross thinking mind is gone. There's still a subtle level of what they call the thinking mind, subtle thinking mind. Meditation is improved through knowledge of faults and various obstacles. And due to this heightened awareness, there is still a little danger of that subtle thinking mind or excitement or laxity. Okay? You just need to be vigilant at this point. Just need to know where your mind is going away and you bring it back. You're still there. You're pretty good, but it still happens a little bit. And then you complete that pacification in the next stage. Okay? Powers of mindfulness and discriminating alertness are now complete. Your balance cannot be upset by subtle thinking or dullness or inattentiveness or by subtle excitement, but it still requires some effort to keep going. It's still, you're sitting there, but it's completely not one-pointed. It still requires the, I still want to do it. Like, I want to put in some effort. I got to do more. I got to do more. It's still going on. And then what happens in the eighth one? Single-pointed. Okay? And again, they say there's still very subtle vigilance left in this one. But in the end, what you reach is the meditative equipoise or pure stabilization. Ability to place your mind and object of concentration with equanimity, faultless concentration, and it doesn't matter how long, you can just stay that put and you're fully engaged. These are the levels of meditation. So advanced people are able to stabilize their minds for days and so on. So this is the foundation of insight. This is how concentration sets up. Good to be aware of it. 9 stages of meditative process to attain calm abiding, complete samatha. It is calm abiding. Okay? You know, a little bit of Tantra and Vajrayana, there's a whole course on it. All you need to be aware is this is the quickest vehicle of Buddhism, as it allows certain practitioners to attain enlightenment within a single lifetime. Okay? So that's the key piece here. Practicing all the analytical meditations of the path, the three scopes, in the correct order brings us to the three major realizations, which means the three scopes. You understand the lower scope, right? You understand the middle scope. You understand the greater scope. And with that of a fully renounced mind and bodhicitta and the right view understanding emptiness, then we are qualified to enter the quick path to enlightenment, the Vajrayana path. Okay, not done properly, not understanding the sutra part, not understanding the three scopes, the sutrayana part they call it. Okay, not understanding those properly can have consequences when you get into this kind of level. Okay, it requires, most important thing is to have a fully qualified teacher, spiritual master, and to follow the instructions carefully. There are 4 levels of tantra, 4 types of tantric groups, you know, and then also remember that in tantra where they talk about this generating phase and a completion phase, okay? And so you generate something like the deity and then you finish it, and there are steps involved in it, breathing involved in it, there are techniques involved in it. It requires initiation and guidance of a qualified teacher. So it's important first to develop the three scopes, understand it, and then you can request the teacher to then lead you into understanding Tantra and Vajrayana, path of the way. But at least be familiar with that. The last module, number 13, is on Tantra that Dan Brown teaches, okay? So be familiar with that. So, foundation of all good qualities. This is a concise prayer that's written by Lama Tsongkhapa. So if you were to see, he wrote like a small lamrim, a middling, and a full lamrim, which we know the 3 big volumes, right? So if you were to look at this now, what I want you to do is get your mind around this. When I go through this reading, you need to think about the path that we have covered. See, okay? So I'm gonna walk you through it, and then we're going to think about all the different things that we've covered in this presenting the path module. All right? So first one in the foundation, just relax and listen, okay? Just like a meditation, just sit back and listen. So the first paragraph says, the foundation of all good qualities is a kind and perfect pure guru. Correct devotion to him is the root of the path. By clearly seeing this and applying great effort, please bless me to rely upon him in great respect. So if you think about the first 3 contemplation, devotion to the teacher, the next module coming up is going to be spiritual teacher. So this is talking about the spiritual teacher. So we talked about that. So now listen to the next one. Understanding the precious freedom of this rebirth is found only once, is greatly meaningful and is difficult to find again. Please bless me to generate the mind that unceasingly, day and night, takes the essence. So what was the contemplation of eventual precious human rebirth? How rare it is. And we have the richness and the endowments. We have a reasonable sense to learn. We are in a place where Dharma can be learned and taught, is still taught. We have Sangha members that can help us. We have Geshe-la and venerables that can support us. We have each other we can talk with. So we are in a reasonably good place. We have the hands and the eyes and the nose relatively in good condition to be able to do this. So those are the richnesses of this precious human rebirth that allows us to now practice and learn Dharma. Okay, so that's what this paragraph is talking about, precious human rebirth. And we talked about those things, right? You remember that in the first class or second class? So then we went into the first scope, didn't we? And what was the first thing we learned in the first scope? Death and impermanence. So here's the prayer, third paragraph. This life is impermanent as a water bubble. Remember how quickly it decays and death comes. After death, just like a shadow follows the body, the results of black and white karma follows. So you can see death and impermanence and beginning of the karma. Still in first scope there, right? The next paragraph. Finding firm and definite conviction in this, please bless me always to be careful, to abandon even the slightest negatives and accomplish all virtuous deeds. So these are your non-virtuous actions of body, speech, and mind, the beginning of the karma, right? And so what he's saying is, please bless me to be always be careful, to abandon even the slightest negative and accomplish all virtuous deeds. See, so you're seeing this, that this is talking about karma. Okay? Seeking samsaric pleasure is a door to all suffering. They are uncertain and cannot be relied upon. Recognizing these shortcomings, please bless me to generate the strong wish for the bliss of liberation. So this is talking about developing renunciation from samsaric pleasure. A little bit of beginning to yearn for liberation. Okay? So we went through that in second scope. Led by this pure thought, mindfulness, alertness, and great caution arise. The root of the teachings is keeping the Pratimoksha vows. Please bless me to accomplish this essential practice. Okay? So again, you wanting to liberate, so you want to keep your vows, you want to keep your commitment, you want to continue to practice. And then the next one is truly generating the full renunciation. Just as I've fallen into the sea of samsara, and if you remember in second scope, the Four Noble Truths we went to, we learned the suffering, the three types of suffering, and then also he talked about the 12 dependent originating links, what keeps us keeping in samsara. And if you remember the wheel of life, we went through that particular session. So he's talking about, just as I've fallen into the sea of samsara, so have all the mother migratory beings, please bless me to see this and train in the supreme bodhicitta and bear the responsibility of free migratory beings. Even if I develop only bodhicitta, but I don't practice the three types of morality, we covered them today. Okay, refraining from non-virtues, morality number one. Number two, developing virtuous actions or creating merits. And the third one is benefiting others. So even if I develop only bodhicitta, but I don't practice the three types of morality, I will not achieve enlightenment. With my clear recognition of this, please bless me to practice the bodhicitta vows with great energy, enthusiastic perseverance, joyful effort. Right? So you can see how going through the classes, even in the prayers, all of these things are there, right? Once I have classified distractions to wrong objects and correctly analyzed the meaning of reality, please bless me to generate quickly within my mind stream the unified path of calm abiding and special insight. We talked about developing concentration and special insight. Right? Having become pure vessel by training in the general path, bless me to enter the holy gateway of the fortunate ones, the supreme Vajra vehicle. So remembering in the last thing I said is, once you have learned all of these things, practiced, analyzed, then you're ready to move into the Vajrayana path. At this time, basis of accomplishing the two attainments is keeping pure vows and samaya. As I fully become firmly convinced in this, please bless me to protect these vows and pledges like my life. Okay. Then we have three more paragraphs to go through. Then having realized the importance of these two stages, remember I said when you they're teaching Vajrayana that you go through the generating phase and the completion phase, so I'm alluding to that. Then having realized the importance of the two stages, the essence of Vajrayana, by practicing with great energy, never giving up the four sessions, they do four sessions, sometimes 6 hours each, you know, so you have to realize the commitments here. Please bless me to realize the teaching of the Holy Guru. Like that, may the gurus who show the noble path and the spiritual friends who practice this have long lives. Please bless me to pacify completely all outer inner hindrances. Okay, so think about that. All outer and inner hindrances. In all my lives, never separated from perfect gurus, may I enjoy the magnificent dharma by completing the qualities of the stages of the path. May I quickly attain the state of Vajradhara, become Buddha. Become Vajradhara means primordial Buddha, Buddha nature. So I wanted to go through this because now you can relate to when you do these kind of prayers. You will click in some of these words, start to make sense out of it, and you see that we've kind of gone through all of these aspects in the path. Okay. So with that, I want you to now get into a little meditative position and mind. Okay, so you're again sitting back straight, legs flat on the floor, eyes slightly open or closed, just relaxed, and let's just do a little meditation. So let's do a little motivation for this meditation. Create an altruistic motivation for this meditation session, okay? Think that you're meditating not just for your own well-being or peace of mind or good reputation, but you're taking the time now to meditate and develop the mind of bodhicitta that seeks to attain the state of enlightenment, where you can most skillfully benefit all beings and lead them from suffering to enlightenment. So now start by imagining that you're surrounded by all sentient beings who are in form of human beings. Your father is seated on your right. Your mother is seated on your left. And behind you are all your friends and family members, those you are close to. So in front of you are all sentient beings that you have difficulty with or that you dislike. And surrounding you in all directions, as far as you can see, are all remaining sentient beings. They are all seated facing you. And well, now take time to thoughtfully look at, contemplate, and really examine in your own mind a few points known as the seven techniques of Mahayana cause and effects. Contemplating on these points helps us to develop bodhicitta in our mind, the wish to achieve full enlightenment for benefit of all sentient beings. The first one. So let's begin with the first point, thinking about each statement and give it some thought. Really look at what it means to you. Number one, seeing all sentient beings as having been my mother. Second, remembering the kindness of all mother sentient beings. attempting to repay the kindness of all Mother sentient beings. Now, think about generating love, kindness towards all Mother sentient beings. And generate compassion towards them. Now develop a special attitude of universal responsibility, generating the mind of enlightenment, bodhicitta. And now that we have taken a few minutes to contemplate all the points in order and reach the last point, bodhicitta, make this determination. I must reach the perfect state of enlightenment as quickly as possible in order to bring all kind Mother sentient beings to the unequaled peace and happiness of their awakened state. Enlightenment is a state of perfect compassion, perfect wisdom, perfect power, all these three in balance. Only when I'm enlightened will I be able to see perfectly the exact needs and the propensities of sentient beings and thus be able to guide them perfectly and lead them to enlightenment. And for the sake, and for their sake, to free from every suffering and bring them every happiness, I must reach the awakened state of Buddha. And from now on, this is where I shall direct all my energy in every moment of my life. Having genuinely generated this thought within ourselves, let's stop all thinking processes and simply remain concentrated on this determination with a single-pointed focus, allowing it to absorb into deeper levels of your mind. Having worked to develop this pure mind of bodhicitta, may I quickly generate all positive qualities of kindness and compassion and remove all negativities and obscurations of self-cherishing from my mind. And may I swiftly awaken to the state of supreme enlightenment and lead all other beings to that supreme state. Thank you. Can bring your attention back to the class. quick summary. We're going to connect the dots. So guys, first of all, thank you. You've gone through all three scopes. I can go through in my mind and tell you everything we've covered, all three scopes, the contemplations, the background, and all the little meditations we've done. So let's just put this together very quickly. I'm not going to go into a lot of details, but at least make that whole connection now. I want you to see the larger picture now, okay? So the lower scope, remember the goal? Striving for happiness, sorry. Striving for happiness in future lives. Okay? And if you look at Lamrim, obviously everything starts with the qualities of the compilers, the teachers, how it should be taught and so forth. But when you get to the main subject matter, everything, before even the scope starts, precious human rebirth is there. And we talk a little bit about the mind. You have to have this foundation. And the mind, the precious human rebirth, and spiritual teacher are the three foundations. And then they start to talk about scopes. And the first scope, lower scope, is for those that are striving for happiness, their own happiness in future life. And we talk about, these are the topics we covered. And I'm just going to go very quickly. We remember the notes, how to listen, the three parts. Everybody remembers that, right? So you should at least know the three parts. The, you know, upside down part, you can't, nothing goes in your head. If there's a hole in it, then it goes up one ear, goes out the other one. And if it's polluted, that's no good, right? So remember how you approach. And then we went through establishing the lineage, the teachers, that these teachings came from Buddha himself. So that's the main point. Okay, and then Lama Atisha, 11th century, was invited to Tibet, and he put all these 84,000 teachings in an organized, concise way for the 11th century, called with a book called Lamp for the Path. So you should remember that. The three parts, the Lamp for the Path, 11th century, Lama Atisha in Tibet. He went from India, and then he went to Tibet, and he stayed there for 17 years. So and then, of course, Lama Tsongkhapa, our Gelug master. He wrote and expanded on, not expanded, but he has written beautiful, the graduated step-by-step Lamrim. And so he's a religious teacher. Okay, so then we went to the first scope. Okay, the three preliminary contemplations, we finished the three scopes of Lamrim, just give you an overview. So here's the first part of the lower scope, death and impermanence. Important to remember, death is definite. Time of the death is uncertain, and only positive seeds and dharma can be helpful. Okay? And the impermanent nature of our body, the impermanence of ourselves, this body will go. The mind continues, right? So it's very important to know that. And then what happens? Future rebirths. You know, why this is important to know about impermanence and death and precious human rebirth? Because you want your future rebirth to be in a place where you can continue to practice. If you have wrong mind, if you have bad seeds, and then you can be born possibly in the bad states of mind in the lower realms. Look at the animals around you. Okay? And so now you're committed. You want to learn. You want to understand this path. You want to go and take a refuge under the umbrella of Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, the three jewels. So you take refuge, right? That's the reason for the refuge. They're saying, I got to learn this. I'm going to change my mind. I'm going to be a better human being, and I'm going to practice what Buddha himself realized, right? And then you need to understand the law of karma. This is not something that you think like a chapter in a book, but that's a law. It's like gravity, and we need to understand the law of karma. Right. And also you remember in the karma, he talked about a couple of things, the 10 non-virtuous actions of body, speech, and mind. We covered also how karma ripens. And remember the four conditions to bring fully ripened results. You have to have intent, you have to have an object, and then you have to have an action and a result. That's the full karma. And then depending on your karma, you take a certain type of birth when it ripens. So those are the four ways it ripens. And the intent to bring fully ripened results, sorry. And also remember that in karma, habits are something to think about, that we have certain tendencies from previous karma, okay, karmic behavior, karmic actions. And so we need to be familiar with them and be mindful of it now. And the good thing is we can purify it now. And how do you purify it? You need to use the four opponent powers. And what are they? Regret. You regret you've done something, right? You regret it. Not guilt, but regret. You rely on the Buddha, right? His teachings, right? So we rely on it. We find a remedy, find an antidote, do purification practice, do mantras, create a positive mindset. So you find a remedy, and in the end, you develop a resolve not to do it. Four ways you can purify your karma. And if you remember, we went through a great meditation of Vajrasattva, and we did the purification of body, speech, and mind. So that was your first scope we covered. Then we went to the middle scope. Now we are striving for liberation from cyclic existence. Still individual, still my own liberation. But we needed to understand the Four Noble Truths, the causes of suffering, and the 12 links. And the Four Noble Truths was the first turning of the wheel from by Buddha, and he taught about what? That there is suffering. There's a causes for suffering. And what are the main causes of suffering? The three poisons. If you remember, everything is problematic with ignorance, attachment, aversion, and all the rest of them, the branches of all of them, right? Envy and pride and all those, same vein. The three poisons. And then the third is what? There is cessation. We apply the antidotes, we do purification practice, we can bring it down. We can seize those negative actions. We know how mind works now. We can change it. Remember from emptiness, mind is not, we are not inherently existent. That means things are changing. And if things are changing, suffering will stop also and will change. That's the beauty of this. If everything was static, we cannot change it. But because things are changing, cause and effect, and things are moving along, we are able to change our mind. And that's what this teaching is all about. Developing virtuous thoughts, virtuous mindset. Right? So that's the beauty of the Four Noble Truths. And how do we do it? He shows us the path. Buddha's path, the Lam Rim. We've been learning those things. Then the causes of suffering, we finish. Four Noble Truths, the causes of suffering. You know, we talk about karma. We talk about continuous activities we do that causes us suffering. Mostly, it is with the three poisons, right? Ignorance, not knowing how things exist. Also, thinking of self or I as solidly existence, right? Existent. And then and also understanding now different tools we have so that we can remedy the causes of suffering. So that's okay. And then, of course, why do we come back in samsara again and again? We talked about the 12 links. And where does it start from, the 12 links? Ignorance. Anybody remember all the 12 links? You want me to go through them very quickly? I'll just tell them very quickly. Just the top line, okay? The first one is ignorance. Because, you know, if you're living, you develop ignorance, you don't know how things exist, you have a self-feeling of this I is very constantly strong in your mind, you think of self as me and I. And so what happens is, the second thing is, from there starts all the thought patterns or what they call karmic behavior, activities, and so forth. And so that becomes the second link. And then it starts to sit in your consciousness slowly and steadily. That's the third link. And then what happens, you start to crave some of these things. A little bit of attachment going on there. And then the next link is grasping. So now you're chasing that happiness so strongly that if you don't get it, you're angry. You are worried about it. You're always thinking about it. So now you're in that grasping mode. And then it becomes part of you before you die. It's part of your seed now. And then the next link, fifth link, is becoming or existence. This is right before you die. This seeds have a propensity to move forward, right? And to the next birth. And guess what it's looking for? The last seed that you had in your mind. So now you have a rebirth, right? And in the rebirth, first your mind comes and sits your mother's egg and father's sperm, but your mind comes and establishes over there. And so there's a rebirth, and then you get name and form, right? You develop a form, you get it. That's what they call name and form. And then the six organs or sense organs develop. So you start to see taste and hear and all those things. Then the contact takes place. You start to venture out now. You want to contact. And from contact, feelings develop. I like it. I don't like it. This is great. I want more of it. It starts again, right? And then after feeling, you now have attachment. You've developed aversions. You have ignorance because you don't know what the truth is, the reality is. And then what happens? Aging, sickness, death. And then again, the propensity of those things again catapult you back into the circle. Okay? So that's what brings us back again and again and again. So the root, we need to cut the root, and that is to remove the ignorance, understand the wisdom of emptiness. And then just emptiness is not enough. You have to have a mind that wants to liberate. And then also you need bodhicitta, and we'll cover that in a second here. So that covers the second noble, second scope, and things that circle. Of course, my notes are based on how I went through the sessions and classes. But if you look at just the square, four noble truths, we went through all of the 12 links of interdependence origination, and we started talking about emptiness. And then we went to great scope. And now what are we doing? We're striving for enlightenment. Remember, the first one was striving for a happy future life. Second one, still individual, looking for individual liberation. And now we are looking for enlightenment. And so the main things to cover was bodhicitta and six perfection. Right? So we now understand how the three scopes are all organized. And here you're striving for enlightenment. This is the Mahayana piece. Right? So this is how we covered the three scopes. Now, this is almost finishing now. So Lama Tsongkhapa, the three, if you were to take the juice out of all this learning, the three aspects of the path, I've mentioned it already, Lama Tsongkhapa explains, right, that renunciation and bodhicitta and the correct view of emptiness are the three pathways of the mind essential for reaching enlightenment through either the sutra and tantra, means of practice. Okay? Quick understanding of renunciation. Look at I have a definition in there, but, sorry. Keeps running away from me. There we go. So if you were to just even read the bottom, it's an attitude with which we turn our minds completely away from all wishes for samsara, right? An uncontrollable reoccurring existence. And our attainment of liberation is dependent on having such a renunciation. So you want to have the wish to say, I don't want to come back in samsara. And we are not talking about giving up your home, you know, your car and your things, but you need to, if you want to get enlightened, you cannot be attached so strongly with all of these things, material things and pleasures. And your mind is now saying, I want to get liberated, that's renunciation. Okay? Oh, sorry. Jumping. Renunciation, we finished. Let's go to bodhicitta. I think we talked about it today. It's an attitude of or intention to attain enlightenment to benefit all sentient beings. Instead of limited beings, I should say living beings. It's a typo. Okay. And it can be aspirational and engaging. You can aspire to become a Buddha. So you can benefit all sentient beings, but you can also engage in daily activities. We talked about the paramita, generosity, morality, patience, enthusiastic perseverance, right? So you can also engage. And ultimately, you need to understand emptiness, the correct view of how things exist, the dependent origination, dependent arising, that we don't exist completely or inherent. You need to contemplate on it, think about it, read more. It is a shock to the mind because we are not used to thinking about emptiness. We are not used to looking at reality that way. Everything appears solid. And we can go talk about this for hours. I mean, there's a whole class on this, but at least realize that you should do some reading and contemplation of how things exist and how we label things and think it's real. Okay? So those three things combined are the three aspects of the path. So when you finish the first two scopes, you are thinking about your own liberation, but then Mahayana asks Bodhicitta, and that's what takes you to the enlightenment. And these are very important three pieces to understand. So have a question, if you care to. Otherwise, I'll just welcome some of the things to you. So can anybody tell me how Ram Rim is structured? Linda, if anybody wants to volunteer.
So if you want to volunteer, you can simply unmute or you can raise your hand. And and if you're watching on YouTube, you can type it in the chat. Julie, you're unmuted. Did you want to say something?
Okay, so the Lam Rim is structured in three parts, the three scopes. You have the lower scope, the middle scope, and the higher scope. Is that the answer you're kind of looking for?
That's simple as that. That's simple as that. At least realize that this is based on different motivations. Each motivation is, one is happiness for this life and for next life. Second one wants to liberate for the individual. And the third one is the Mahayana concept of enlightenment so that you can benefit others. But what you answered was correct based on the question. So what is the correct way to listen to the teachings?
And again, feel free to unmute.
With an open mind.
Todd said, with an open mind.
Yeah, with an open mind. So this is where you can give the analogy, if you have to answer it a little lengthy, to the three parts, right? You want to pay attention, you want to have an open mind, and you don't want to come with a polluted mind to listen to the Dharma. And you want to listen in with an open mind. Perfect. Okay, what are the three preliminary contemplations?
Oh, good Lord.
Is that about the mind? Like mind is non-physical and beginningless and without end and clear and pure. Are those the three that you're looking for?
So the first, we learned about the mind. The second contemplation was precious human rebirth. And the third one was the spiritual teacher and the devotion to the teacher. So those were the three foundations. And those are the fundamental things before this. We begin to start learning about death and impermanence. So kind of at least remember that at all times, when you think about Lam Rim or anything like in your practice, that you think about your mind. What is your mind? It is beginningless. It is formless. It is your own, and it has the potential, and its nature is to know. You need to know that, right? That's how you learn. Okay, so what are the three points of death that Lama Atisha gets us to contemplate?
I think I know what these are. This is Janet.
Yes, Janet.
That death is definite, that the time of death is uncertain, and that the time of death is extremely important.
Excellent. That's exactly right.
Exactly right.
What does karma mean?
Action.
Action.
Action, cause and effect, right? You remember, as soon as the cause happens, it is already passing. So we are always creating karma, body, speech, and mind. The cause and its effect, the results, is pretty similar to the cause. And that's what keeps going and going and going. So whatever you put in your mind, with body, speech, and mind, what happens? It results and ripens accordingly. So it's definitely action. So cause and effect in action. So that's karma. Okay? So then how do we purify it? With the four opponent powers. Can you remember what they are?
Regret, reliance, remedy, and resolve.
Yay. Very good. Okay, here's a little more little today's mindset. Name at least four of the six perfections.
Yep. Morality.
Generosity. Sorry.
Yep.
Generosity, morality, concentration, wisdom, patience.
Very good.
And
enthusiastic perseverance or joyful effort. So the first four are, of course, generosity. Then we talked about the morality, ethical self-discipline. Then we talked about having patience. Remember the red light? We needed patience. So remember that. And, you know, that's the time to practice. And the fourth one is not giving up. Then do it with enthusiasm, right? So that's the fourth one. Then develop concentration so you can analyze and you can have insight. You can start to really look at things and make it integrate all of these teachings and all of these tools that we have. And ultimately, intuitively, you will you will practice emptiness, learn about it, and you will start to see how things are. And that is just, you have to really dig into it a little bit further. Okay? So you learn emptiness. So those are definitely the six perfections. What are the three principal aspects of the path?
Renunciation, bodhicitta, and I forget the third.
And emptiness.
Emptiness, okay.
Right? You need to, from the second scope, you want to develop a mind to not want to be circling back again and again in some sort of renunciation. You need to practice bodhicitta and the tools of the six perfections and by wanting to benefit others. So you need that to really want to become Buddha and enlightenment. And you need to understand the reality of things, because the root problem we have in samsara is what? Ignorance, not knowing how things are. And the only way you learn that is through learning sunyata or emptiness, three principal aspects of the path. And so I want to say thank you first to Linda Shah, because I don't know how she keeps coordinating all of these things. It is just amazing. I have a lot of gratitude for Kadampa Center, all the DB teachers, first and foremost, Keshala and our venerables, or two Keshalas, our venerable, of course, FPMT. And I tell you, and I thank you all, because you have all the four of the six perfections already there by just being in this class, having patience and being generous of your time and having the morality and the ethical discipline to be doing it and doing it actually with enthusiasm. We all need to develop more concentration and insight, and hopefully we'll all recognize emptiness soon. And so I just want to thank you, and I hope that at least going through the path, now you know where you need to deep dive, right? You need to know topics. Like you can see that in your mind you can remember some things, but verbalization is sometimes difficult. So whenever you get a chance, of course the next one is very powerful, class coming up by Ravi, you know, about the spiritual teacher. We talked about the first three contemplation. Spiritual teacher is the foundation, one of the foundations. So there are a lot of questions in your mind. Good class to go to. Okay? And then ultimately there are various modules. And another module that will be very fun for me to teach would be establishing the daily practice. Okay? So we'll definitely talk some really nice ways to establish daily practice. And I think I have one more module, emptiness, isn't it, Linda, that I will be teaching? But there are,
I can't remember. Hammond.
Yes, I
have. I don't remember who's teaching one.
Yeah, I have that one. But anyway, each and every module, you have some fantastic Steve and Don Brown and Robbie Watkins, amazing experience, amazing beings. And so it's wonderful that we even have this opportunity to be able to have a program like this.
And thank you. Huge thanks to you, Hemant. And you have Wisdom of Emptiness. that's module 12. So that's a big one. That's a biggie.
Yeah, that's what they need. So anyway, you have my name, you have my email address, you have my telephone number. If you need to reach me, if you want to continue to chat, if there are some questions, Julie, I told you we can always connect anytime. But anybody else, please feel free to. And I want to thank you for listening to me, okay? So have a great
evening.
Thank
you so much, Hemant. And we do have a question as to whether or not your presentation, the slides, will be made available.
Yeah, so what I'm trying to do, and I want to be upfront about it, is there are a few things I've taken from various readings and books. And I need to make sure that I give credit to those teachers. And, you know, I want to make sure that there's no infringement of copyrights. So what I will do is I'll clean it up. I will make it available. I will certainly run it by Geshe-la. He's already told, okay, but just to be sure, and then I will put it online for people to have. Because I don't want something to go out of line, think, oh, this is from such and such book, you plagiarized it or something like that. I want to make sure that it is my own and that I've taken it from the syllabus of FEMT. So I want to make sure of that, and I will do that.
Okay. And then we can, you know, I can always post that with the user platform where you have to access it with the username and password, which, by the way, the password is not currently working. It was brought to my attention and I checked it out and it's not working. So I'll send an email and we'll get that fixed. So just, you know, keep trying and you can access that hopefully in the next day or so.
Sure.
Thanks, Linda. Thanks for everything. Hemant, such a clear class. I can't thank you enough. I hope to see you in a couple of weeks, Linda, okay? And then everybody else.
Yeah. 2 weeks off, so we're looking at June 14th.
All right.
Yeah. Thank you, Gary. Thank you so much for kind words.